Danny, my man, what's happening? How you doing? Welcome back to the show. Good to see you.
Dude, thanks for having me. Not too much going on. Enjoying the summer. We have, you know, fabulous weather here in California. So lots of outside time, lots of hiking, lots of dog time, lots of working out. All things that do the mind and body good. So no complaints. Life's very good.
Nice. It's funny that you mentioned nice weather. This is obviously going to be like geographically relevant, just like geographically dependent. But I saw a tweet or something the other day. It was like, for the first like 12 years of your life, the only time you have off is the summer. So you build this like crazy association of like summer being like the best time and you have the best memories. You're excited for summer. But like then you become an adult and you're like, summer's the fucking worst. Like and it depends. If you live in like Canada or something where you're like, you know, you have like really cold weather and then the summer is like the time you get to be outside, I'm sure you don't feel that way. But it's funny, I feel absolutely that way. It's like 90, we're in North Carolina, which is great most of the year, but it's like 90 and humid, and I'm like, yeah, summer blows, you know? But yeah, it is what it is.
The more solar equipped your home, the better summer is. When I got this house, I had to get solar installed because of some, you know, state mandated stuff. And I was like pretty frustrated at first, but every time we have these 100 degree days, I just like crank it at 62 and I don't pay for it. And I'm like, okay, I am impervious to summer mood fluctuations now. I am truly seasonally agnostic.
So that's interesting you say, because so my office faces, basically the sun comes down, I guess we're facing the west-ish over here. And mm-hmm. So for the whole like three quarters of the end of the day, my office gets rocked and the back of my house is like,
yeah.
My back of my house is good. It's like an ice box. And then in this room, I'm just getting, it's like a sauna. And so, yeah, that's interesting that you said that. And my AC just can't keep up. It just like literally can't keep up. And so you're right. Maybe we got to fire up some solar. I got to talk to the solar people.
Not only do you need to fire up some solar, bro, you need to just like reorient your home. Lift it from its foundation and turn it 90 degrees. You should be fine.
If you just put like a big, like black panel in front of the entire house, that just sucks it up, then we could do that. Yeah. Probably not.
If you haven't yet tried building a wall at least the height of your home, you could try that.
You could absolutely try that. Yeah. All right, cool. We're going to do a Q&A today. I got a bunch of questions, which I appreciate people asking. I was just telling you, like, Q&A box, if you put up like a weird Q&A box about something, people are like turned off. It's only when you're doing like a bread and butter Q&A that you're inundated with questions. But we got a lot of good questions.
I love it.
Yes. Was there anything I wanted to ask you before? Anything new going on with you since the last time we talked?
I will divulge that my wife and I are going to have a kid.
Yeah.
I have chosen to be a little bit quieter about that just because, there's a certain degree of privacy that is not afforded to somebody who chooses to post shit on social media. And I have chosen that. My kid has not. So I am really excited about it, but I'm still grappling with how to, you know, tightrope the privacy and just, you know, soft announcing it. And then the other thing is, I've said this to my wife, I've said this to other people, like the ability to conceive a child is really challenging for so many families. In an era of like flexing everything, we did not want to flex like the miracle that was being able to have a kid until we felt it was appropriate to share. And like, it's got to be tasteful because I'm just tremendously empathetic to the people who are trying and maybe having a harder time with it. So we're thrilled, we're pumped, we're excited. And it's been a great lesson on just kind of the preciousness of everything. And of course we've watched you become a dad. So that's cool and inspiring. Gives me hope.
Yeah. Hopefully not making it seem too easy, because it certainly brings with its own challenges. But you're right. And so my wife does a lot of sharing on social media, like a lot more vulnerable, a lot more transparent, shares like a lot of what's going on with us as parents. And when she was pregnant and we were, you know, near, you know, even when we were just trying to be pregnant and then ultimately had our daughter, you're so right with like just being really compassionate towards the fact that every healthy baby is a miracle and that not everybody's going through that experience in the same way. And so she does a lot of sharing, and she's very cognizant of that and adds, you know, a lot of disclaimers and a lot. You're finding that balance between sharing is really great and showing your what's going on is really great. The good, the bad, the ugly, all of it is super helpful, but also being very in tune to the fact that that's not everyone's experience. So you're dead on with like, at least like considering that. I feel like people don't even consider how that might be received. And so you're good for whatever your decision is irrelevant. The fact that you're considering it is good.
Yeah, I just noticed that, you know, like so many accomplishments in life, whether it's buying a home, a cool car, having a kid has for a lot of people become like a status display because, you know, it is a beautiful thing and it is really cool. But like, you know, if somebody wanted a house and couldn't afford it, I'd say work harder. If somebody wanted a cooler car and couldn't afford it, I'd say work harder. If somebody had a wanted a kid but couldn't conceive one, I'd be devastated and be like, you know, it's categorically not fair. And this is one fact that biology often chooses for us. So we're like unbelievably blessed to be 6 months into a healthy pregnancy, looking forward to meeting a boy. And yeah, we'll go from there.
Nice. Super cool, man. I'm pumped to chat more about dad life. I think it's been good to have just some people in a similar season of life to chat about. So I'm always open to that. Cool.
Super cool, man. I can't wait.
Nice. So let's hop into some of these questions. We're going to start with, we have a couple. Let's start with best piece of advice each of you has ever been given. We'll go back and forth. You do this one first. I'll go to the next one.
Okay. So this is just a generalized money piece of advice, but I have been able to like apply this to a lot of other things, especially in the fitness space, which I think is huge because taking things from outside of fitness and bringing them into fitness really helps. But it was just the notion that like you can accomplish most of your money goals if you're okay with them happening on a slower time horizon and you expand your time horizon a little longer. So, you know, the idea here is like everybody wants to be rich tomorrow, but, you know, most people, if they were cool with it, could for sure be rich in 20 or 30 years. And I found in fitness, it's very, very much effective to adopt a similar lifestyle of like, I know I want to be in shape. I know I want to improve my health and I want to do it soon. And that time pressure often leads to poor decision-making or maybe aligning ourselves with like less than ideal protocols for where we are in life. And I think the advice I would give everybody is to, unless it's really prescient and necessary, expand the time horizon on all of your fitness goals to better fit your lifestyle and allow it to ultimately become a lifestyle.
Yep. Love that. There's no two ways about it. Like little small things, focusing more on what feel like little small things, but will ultimately compound into very large things is usually a more fruitful way of going about it rather than, you know, finding, and it's funny if you try and create more and more ties analogous to finances, there's like, you could even go to say that like the bulk of what you should do should be that, but it's like, okay to occasionally try new things and like a percentage of your money that's in like more risky stuff and a percentage of your like lifestyle is like trying new things, but like you have the base foundational habits that are more on that zoomed out long-term scale. So yeah, I really do like that a lot. The thing that came to mind to me was, again, it's just like best piece of advice, like without preparation, this is what jumps to mind, is just like for coaches, and maybe this is just like a general like work ethic mentality of scaling the unscalable. And that's a classic like Gary V, like Jordan Syatt. And what that means essentially is like when you're newer and starting out, I'll use you as an example. You have over 100,000 followers. So by definition, there are things that you just cannot do. And that might be answer every comment. That might be answer every email. That might be, and it might be answer every DM. And it might be that you can answer them, but you can't go as deep. And you might be like, oh, I have 100 clients. So, and somebody else might starting out might have 3 clients. It's like you with 3 clients can do way more than Danny with 100 clients, Danny with 100,000 followers with 100,000 comments. And so you can at this point scale something that is ultimately unscalable for the very, very long term. And so there's a lot of like, you know, if you can turn the fact that you have less followers and less comments and less DMs and less clients into a superpower of, well, that means I get to go and give more than Jordan can, more than Danny can to that person. Always meant a lot to me because like that might be how you like someone's like, oh, I don't know what Jordan and Danny know. They have more followers and more experience. It's like, yeah, but you might have more time to be able to spend per client. And that might ultimately be what matters to that person more is that you gave them more of your time and thought, and you didn't rush a Zoom call and you didn't, you know, and you were just willing to spend an extra 10 minutes with them. And so scaling the unscalable is just whatever. It's just such a cringy, like probably plucked out of like a self-help book, but like this idea of, you know, if turning your kind of like I'm earlier in the game and I have a little bit more time to go the extra mile, turning that into a superpower over people who have, you know, maybe are further along in air quotes that maybe can't do that.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Nice. All right. Dan, this is specifically for you. Danny, how do you like having an in-person part of your job too. I'm working on becoming an online coach, but I see you also have a studio.
Yeah. So for me, this has always just been a component of the training experience that has been exceptionally fun for me. And I know that many coaches start in that space, and after a couple of years, they want to leave and they want to do what they do fully remote, because this is true. It's probably more lucrative per unit of time invested to do online coaching than in-person coaching. But the reason that I do this actually has like nothing to do with money. It's probably like the honestly biggest like loss leader in my business. But one thing that's been really important to me over the years is just like identifying what truly creates and you know, nourishes happiness in my life. And one of those things is being around a lot of people. And the best like time in my life was when I was making $30 an hour training at 24-hour fitness with like all of my buddies when I was an undergrad. And in between every session, we would do stupid stuff on the gym floor, like try to do a muscle up, or hey, can you clean 225 cold? Like that'd be dumb, but let's try it. And, you know, after building an online audience, after reaching people and being able to work with people over the globe, frankly, I made this promise to myself, like, I'm going to be happy when I have a certain level of status and notoriety in my field. And it didn't really happen. And I think to this very day, like the happiest moments of my life are when I'm in that studio around other people who are training their clients. I'm fortunate to have great trainers who work there with me. And just the connectedness to the work that we do, the vibe of a gym is still incredibly enjoyable for me. I never outgrew it. And so I didn't want to close that chapter of my life. I don't see myself having to do it until I feel like it. And I've told people before, the minute I'm ready to walk away from that, I'll be ready to walk away from fitness probably altogether. Because for me, even though there's so many ways to communicate and reach people, then, you know, especially now with the internet, nothing's ever felt like better than just the vibe of like everybody in the gym making progress, having fun. And so for me, building a studio space was the only way I could recreate that component of my early 20s. And I said, you know what? That made me super happy. I have more than I had then. And I'm still searching for something, and I'm going to like rebuild a little bit of my youth and bring it back into my life as an almost 30-year-old. And even though it costs me something, it was worth it.
What's like your, not even just like a percentage time allocation, but what's a routine like that you have? That are you like, hey, I'm in there 2 days a week for 3 hours, or hey, I'm in there every day till noon, or how are you making that work?
I'll be fully transparent. I think what I'm about to tell people would shock a lot of people, but like I'm going to first start with a caveat that like my ability to allocate my time resources is very different from other people's, because I have fewer responsibilities in so many ways. But most days I'm up 4 or 5, and you know, if I'm not working out, I'll go right into the studio. And I would say I'm spending at least 35 to 40 hours just in that building every week. And a lot of that is still training clients on top of the like 25 to 30 hours additional work that is done.
On top of the 50 to 75 setting. Tweets that go out.
So I understand that to a lot of people that is just like, how? And I sometimes ask myself the same question, but it's like, okay, I love it. I love being there. Yes, I get paid very well to train clients in every capacity based on what I think is reasonable. So it's not about the money. But yeah, the time allocation in that studio is for sure. Like I don't go in on weekends. I'm usually out by like 2 PM at the latest, but like you'll find me there most mornings pretty often, just like, you know, somebody who just got started. And I think there's something important about just like, for me, the maintenance of that practice.
Yeah. You as well both have like a little home gym. And I have two clients that live in the area. And so like they were just kind of like, hey, like what could we do like a session? And it had been probably 2 to 4 years since I'd actually been working in person with anybody. But having them come, I just remember just she was leaving this past Sunday. And I was like, I love having you here. I was like, I love this part of it. Like it is yeah, whatever. It's a privilege to get to choose, you know, kind of what my optimal split between time will be like. But I really do enjoy it. And almost, you know, on some level, like I would be pursuing, you know, I was like, hey, if I can have, you know, five more of you, you know, that were like in the area that wanted to come by and get workouts. I just find that to be super fun. It's from a skills perspective, but also from like a quality of life perspective. Like you said, being around people, I'm way more of an introvert. You were like, I love being mm-hmm. around a lot of people. I don't know if you were like going down the whole extrovert road, but like, on some level, I find that charges my batteries a lot just to have that one-on-one time. And from a coaching perspective, like really is a tool that I don't think people sharpen enough. I think you can get by with the classic, hey, I've trained in a gym for 5 years, built up a lot of skills, then moved online, took those skills and did really well. That's totally, I think people can do that. But I think it's probably something most people don't do enough before they go and think they can make a career online. So, you know, you being very, very, very well established and still finding it useful, it should be something a lot of people should hear.
Yeah. I also think that like one critique I hear about from so many coaches who want to move fully online, it's like, oh, I don't make enough money. And it's like, okay, well, you don't have to only do online. You can supplement that with being a quality in-person coach, and many quality in-person coaches make a great hourly rate. But you know how you split the allocation of resources and how you help people, I have just found doing it in a hybrid model keeps me sane and it keeps my finger on the pulse.
And I actually think if you want to make, and I do not want to put numbers on this because everything is relative, but if you wanted to make a living, I think it's easier in person. I think if I was like, hey, I want to make 100K or something, it's probably easier to do that in person, but it's, you know, if you're like, hey, I want to make $1 million or something, like you're like, okay, that's easier online. But, and so I do think if there's people out there, they're like, hey, I'm online coaching and I'm not making as much as I want. It's like, yeah, like you're missing the easier thing, which is like kicking ass and being the guy in your county who is the go-to guy who people know, who trains really well on the ground. And cool, you don't have as many Instagram followers, but like in your town, when people go into the deli, they like, you know, you're a name people are talking about. It's probably easier to do that.
Yeah. I would agree, dude. I've, again, just to be transparent, like I've cleared $100,000 in revenue as an in-person trainer exclusively since 2000 and since fucking Barack Obama was president, bro. Like literally since 2014, when I was 19 years old, I was able to generate like $125,000 at 24-hour fitness and take home like 80K of it. And basically from that year moving forward, I was able to just trainee clients, have over $100,000 in take home pay. I'm sure all the trainers at my gym do too. And I'm not saying that to be braggadocious. There's quite a bit of work invested in it. But a number that I hear so many coaches throw around is, I want to make $100,000. I want to make $100,000. And it's like, okay, well, train like 30 to 40 sessions a week at $80 to $100 an hour. Yep. And you made $140,000. Okay. And look, nobody's saying that's easy work. I'm not recommending that. I'm not saying that'll happen to you, but it's, you'll get there much faster than you will if you try to build it online.
Yep. Yeah. And just moral of the story, do both. I think doing both is the way to go.
For sure.
We have two, I have two questions that are a little bit counter to each other. And okay, we'll start with this one. What's something a little on the fringe that you still do even without lots of evidence?
I supplement with a variety of different mushrooms and fungal compounds like reishi, chaga, and lion's mane.
I wrote that exact thing down because of the Legion mushroom supplement that just came out. I literally have it written down. Mushroom is one of the things I was about to say. Go ahead.
I think being from California where drug legality is so ubiquitous and like having had the exposure I've had to the various different mushroom compounds that people use for like hallucinogenic and it's very popular and like chic out here. And I'm not like somebody to be like, hey, let's do mushrooms. It's really not for me. But like the like wave of that and the like development of mushroom health supplements like 10 years ago kind of like coincided. So the geography in which I live, like I've been able to go buy lion's mane and chaga at like every health store in my entire county for like the last decade. And now, you know, we both work with Legion, seeing them drop a health supplement with both lion's mane and reishi. To me, that was really cool because, you know, that for sure has been more on the fringe for a long time. Just the evidence basis is super thin. But I'll tell you what I told somebody on a podcast yesterday. There's three kingdoms of biology from which humans can derive nutrition. One of them, of course, is the animal kingdom. The other is the plant kingdom. And the third is the fungal kingdom. And that's actually where we derive a lot of our pharmaceutical compounds. And of course, a lot of the fungal kingdom will kill you. But the parts that won't are very nutrient dense and unique. And much to your analogy about portfolio allocation, if 95% of my nutrition comes from the plant and animal kingdom, 5% coming from the fungal kingdom might give me some diversity and access to things I might not otherwise have access to. So I'd say mushroom supplements.
Yeah, that's hysterical that you put that there. I on that kind of subtopic of Legion reformulations, I think they've done a decent... I think they've done a decent job with some reformulations lately. I think creation of the mushroom supplement, I think, is a response to, so they took took reishi, which was in the green supplement. And I think that they kind of are backing away from the green supplement as a thing. And they're like, oh, well, let's take the reishi out, which is probably the thing a lot of people are interested in our green supplement. There are other things as well. I think green supplement, actually, as far as greens go, is a great supplement. And they took it and they put it in a mushroom with lion's mane. And I think that that is now a standalone, really quality product in probably maybe that like tier two of supplements behind like the core, you know, core four or five. Then they took out the creatine out of the recharge and they now sell a standalone creatine monohydrate, which I think is, again, I don't know how long these things take. So for me to be like, oh, it's a long, they should have done it a long time ago. I think I'm happy they did it. I think it's more price competitive. And the things that were in recharge, creatine was like by far the most important thing. So they just took that out, which I think is important, especially in this economy where, you know, if you're, I don't want to pay $2 a serving for creatine monohydrate. So I think they did
it's reasonable.
And then they,
I was so thrilled with both of those products. I had a meeting with them yesterday and I was like, do you guys realize that I've been asking for these since like 2020 and, and now here they are. I'm fucking pumped.
Totally. Yeah. They're good. And then the Lunar reformulation was good too. The Vitality reformulation I think is smart.
I like the addition of the like blue pigments and the blue polyphenols. In
there. Like blueberry extract or so. It just, I might not be blueberry extract.
Aesthetically pleasing to see a blue.
Yeah. Smart. Smart. Cool. What was mine? What's mine then? I think you could go down the, there's a bunch of supplements that could fall into that category for sure. I think the one I would say is an obsession with light as a form of just setting circadian rhythm. Now that actually there is research. This isn't like a, some woo-woo, you know, shaman stuff, you know? But I think I take it really seriously compared to what I think maybe is out there. And the things that I find are most important to me are the morning sunlight. And I actually, ironically, is wearing blue light blockers at night. And so I'm one to kind of dump on people wearing blue blockers on Instagram, mostly because wearing, like, not only is it just kind of useless to wear a red tinted glasses during the day, it's actually counterproductive to what you would want. So I love blue blockers at night. I actually meaningfully feel a difference when I put the blue, like within the first 45 minutes of putting them on, I get sleepy. Even if I'm doing a little work, watching TV on my phone, I notice a difference in just how stimulating whatever I'm doing is. It is much less stimulating. So blue light blockers would be the one that I have found actually meaningful, but I also have had people in my life that feel that say that don't notice anything at all. I also think they come in a wide range of quality. Some of them, and when I say blue blockers, by the way, PS for the listener, I don't mean like I'm wearing glasses right now that have a blue light tint like in them for computer work. And then that's like level zero where you have like a, what seems to be a clear glass that has like a blue light tint in it or something. Then there's like amber, more like yellow, that yellow tint you'll see like biohackers wearing online. That's like a very soft version of what would be a full blue light blocker, which is like a very dark red lens that you cannot miss. If you follow, you see friggin' what's her face, Primal Bod, she's wearing them 24/7. Those I would subscribe to one who's trying to turn all knobs for sleep, give a shot.
I would agree. I think in both cases, what we are sensitive to is the ability for sensationalism around both of these things. And if sensationalized, they'll probably underdeliver, but if taken with a grain of salt and applied appropriately, I think both of these tools, whether it's blue light blockers or mushroom supplementation, can absolutely benefit your health. But oftentimes they're misapplied and over-sensationalized.
Yep. Agreed. What next one? What's something you do that isn't healthy, but eff it?
I smoke marijuana, which I think is a genuinely negative.
Which we have questions about here too, by the way. So we might as well just let's stay on it.
Yeah, yeah. I do not believe that that is a safe personal choice. I think that I could easily, and this is true, most of the time I consume it is an edible form, but I still do engage with smoking, which is objectively stupid, especially because I'm so anti-drinking. That being said, I will give myself enough leash here. I really don't drink. I maintain a body fat level of between like 10 and 15. I'm relatively well muscled. I do a good amount of aerobic activity. And so this net negative habit does, in my opinion, probably have a limited ability to affect my health in the long term, but the cognitive dissonance is real. And I would also say it like totally falls into the but F it category. So that's my but F it for sure.
Okay, then the counter to you is actually that I don't think it is a net negative then. Like there's a reason you're doing it. And you could say there's an addictive reason you're doing it, and that you might be able to say, okay, it's a net negative. You're doing it for a reason. You're doing it more because you can't stop than it is a net positive. But I also, prior to having my daughter, would have a gummy here and there, let's say, right? You know, like, let's say at like 7 p.m., I take a gummy and like just enjoy the next 3 hours. And by the way, a small, I'm such a lightweight. It's like I'll take a micro dose and just really just not get too effed up, but just kind of whatever, just take the edge off or whatever terminology you would say. But I agree with you that like it's a similar way where it's like, I don't think THC physiologically is having any positive effect. Just like I don't think ethanol is in any way, shape or form having a positive effect. Cognitive dissonance is real on that front, but I think there can be a net positive here of why am I doing it? You know, what's the real reason that one is doing that? Are you really is it helping you relax? Is it creating an overall life experience?
I can be totally positive? Honest with you. I have spent a tremendous amount of time in introspection over why it is that I choose to engage with this habit, despite being somebody who champions health. And I'll say it's an inconsistent engagement, but still in defense of my own behavior. And again, it's for transparency. I was diagnosed with ADHD as a young adult or as a child. I was diagnosed with moderate to severe depression as a young adult. I, like so many people, struggle with transient anxiety. You know, I'm recently married. I own a business. I have to be on a lot for the people that I serve in that business. And I've been able to manage and kind of, I'd say survive a lot of this with zero medication outside of exercise and occasionally including cannabis. And to me, it's certainly not a ding on medication. It's just, I have found a system of modulating my physiology that works. And it helps me deal with some of the more challenging neurological things that other people don't deal with. Doesn't mean it's a great thing. Doesn't mean that maybe there aren't some negative contributing factors from this to those more negative emotions. But it has had a positive effect on my affect and my my mood.
Yeah. Have you ever taken has that cognitive dissonance and the self-introspection that has, you know, that follows, has it ever led you to, I'm going to quit and I'm going to take a break and I'm going to see how that goes?
Yeah, I've taken months off, like literally months off. In fact, not that long ago, I took like 3 months off and I expected to find a version of myself at the other side of this that was like substantially more clairvoyant and happy and at peace. And I was just like, okay, I'm like 5 to 10% different whether or not I engage with this. It's really, I found that the effect was modest after a substantial sobriety break, which honestly gave me a little bit of like, okay, I did that. I felt that I have actual data now. You know, I think there's been sensationalism from certain pockets on social media about how bad cannabis actually is. And I just still don't believe it's really anywhere in near the ballpark of things most people need to worry about if they choose not to get it in from a smoking, which I will admit is the worst way to do it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that it's if you were going to zoom out and say, is the way to live the happiest, healthiest life to only do things that are physiologically healthy for your body? It's kind of a tough sell. So I mean, I think if you're like good, if everybody's going to have a thing, everybody who's sitting with us at this table is going to have an answer to this question of like, oh, you know, you're all about health. What's the thing you do that, like, guess what? I have, last night we had ice cream. Is ice cream is that that ice cream is not like super nutritious, like by any stretch of the imagination. And so where are we, where do we draw this line of, I want to be happy and healthy, but I also, that doesn't mean 100% decisions only pro health all the time. I think that that's unrealistic.
I would just push back aggressively on anybody who said I'm all about health. I'm fucking not all about health, bro. I'm mostly about health. I'm also a little bit about politics, a little bit about sport, a little bit about family, a little bit about finance. I am not all about health.
I'm all about happiness. You know, like I'm all about the quality of life.
I'm all about, I'm all about peace of mind and the very, very strong awareness that I'm going to die one day. And like being mostly about health has made me much happier than being all about health. So that's kind of how I feel.
Yeah. Cool. Nice. On that note, what is something you guys like doing that's completely outside of fitness?
I think both of us probably answer similarly here, but like, I love spending time with my dogs. I find them to be fucking hilarious, bro. Like I think my dogs are like the funniest. I've been watching them in the back.
Kill me.
I think they're like the funniest thing in the whole world. Like they make me laugh so much. So I'd say spending time with my dogs.
Do you feel so that you guys have a different, a more extreme version of what I'm going to say, but you guys, your breeds are so polar, like so on the opposite side of the spectrum. Do you find that to just be a hysterical dynamic?
I do, and so do other people, because my wife has the big macho Doberman and I have like the small tiny terrier. So when we walk them, like, you know, I've got the muscles and the tiny dog, and she's little with the big dog, and it gives people so much opportunity to chime in anywhere we go.
That's awesome. I love that. I have a Havanese Shih Tzu who's like, whatever, 15 pounds. And then I have Gunner, who's a mini golden doodle. He's like 35 pounds. And I kind of wanted them to be more similar size. That was like my intent, but Gunner turned out to be way bigger, which always happens when you buy a dog. They're like, he's going to be 18 pounds. He's fucking 35 pounds. But yeah, I love that. Like the dichotomy of like, she, you know, whatever, just like little dog, like she owns sure him. Is. She owns the house. And so I just think that that's always a funny dynamic. Cool. Nice. Yeah. So spending time with dogs, spending time with family out, you know, it's funny, like, yeah, outside of health and fitness, like going to run around in the field to my dog, like, is that health and fitness? I don't know. It's mental health. That's for sure. Yeah.
It's definitely a health promoting behavior. It's, we wildly underestimate the health promoting capability of pro social behavior.
Yep. What are your go-to home gym pieces of equipment? Both of you guys have pretty sick home gyms.
Sure. So, I think both of us would agree that you have to have dumbbells. You probably want to have a barbell. Very, very, you know, few things can't be loaded effectively when you have those two pieces of equipment. I will say one that I like that I think is budget friendly is a TRX. Not because I think suspension trainers are perfect, but there's just like a small library of exercises, specifically for like the back and the shoulders that are just like, okay, you know what? I don't want to fucking do dumbbell rear bent over flies and like barbell rows for eternity. So having the ability to do like 6 to 8 non-shitty back and shoulder exercises on the TRX, it just, for $200, it expands your like home gym capability. Like, hey, now I got face pulls and I can do some lateral raise variants that are more similar to like the cable ones that, you know, a lot of people really like. I can do different ab exercises for sure, but like the big ones are the various forms of shoulder extension. And so that's one that I always like pimp out. And then of course, like I love a good cable machine. They're so versatile, but they're very expensive. So TRX kind of is like a little shitty version of that.
Yeah. Cable machines are getting happily a little bit more competitive, which is bringing the price down a little bit. Like you can spend two grand is, by the way, that's a lot of money, but like you could spend $2,000 and get kind of an end game cable machine that is like, yeah, maybe misses a bell and a whistle here and there, but it's like super duper functional. You might never need to invest any more in that. So I think that I'm happy to see that. I hope it continues to get even more competitive. I do think lowering that price point just like, God, makes training so much more. And TRX is great. I mean, even if you like literally just bought a TRX for like, for bodyweight rows and for push-ups, like you just have added two way more fun versions of an exercise that you would be doing, you know, bent over a row, an inverted row in your rack or something like that. But the TRX is way more comfortable. And you get a lot, like you said, 6 to 8 really high quality exercises.
One thing we apply a lot to our training is the concept of like external stability. Like, okay, if I can get you to be stable, I can get a better effect out of the muscle we're trying to train. And for a lot of novices, like adding reverse lunges with TRX support or squats with TRX support. It allows the injection of stability to an otherwise like lopdick uncoordinated client. And like, if you're like never worked out in your life, you could train your whole body on a TRX with added stability that will at least get you moving.
Yep. Agreed. Anything I would add to that? I think free weights, I think the absolute, you know, minimum viable options are like adjustable dumbbells and an adjustable bench. If you have those two things, like results wise, if you had 10 years and all you have is really heavy and you don't get bored, you could build a crazy physique with adjustable dumbbells and an adjustable bench. Yeah.
Some people would argue all you need is a barbell with weights
or just like a piping outside of a building where you could just do pull-ups and muscle-ups from. I mean, dudes on the street just jacked. So calisthenics.
Yeah, I have yet to find those genetics, but you'll find me at the playground.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. A couple more. We got a couple minutes.
Let's do it.
These are more on the like, hey, we're going to like fat loss side of things. Looking for fat loss. I have about 10 to 15 pounds to lose. Should I eat less calories on non-training days and more on training days?
Yes and no. I personally prefer to have the same amount of calories every day, but I will say for some people, you'll know this about yourself. If training does enhance your appetite, and for a lot of people, running does, lifting doesn't. But if lifting does or whatever training you do, then by all means, have a few more calories on those days to assuage the hunger and just take them from the days you don't train. And make sure that, you know, get a fucking piece of paper and be like, okay, if I have 1,500 5 days and 2,000 2 days, what does that add up to over 7 days? As long as over 7 days they add up, I don't care.
Yep. Mathematically speaking, irrelevant. I think that a couple of the mathematically irrelevant for body composition, for performance, actually also irrelevant in my opinion. I think just these like subtle shifts in calories for the type of workout that people are doing. If you're doing a 3-hour bike ride, you're in the tour today, you know, like, yeah, you're eating more because that is a workout that could be strongly affected by acute nutrition. But the workouts that we are doing, that most people are doing, and I say most people, I mean like 99.999% of people are doing, don't really have anything to do with acute nutrition. So I don't think you should do that unless, like you said, this is just an appeal to a hunger pattern. This is not like a performance thing. It's not a muscle growth thing. It's not a fat loss thing. It's you should be distributing calories in relation to how hungry you are across the week. And on average, most people are on average going to be similarly hungry. It could also be appeal to lifestyle if you happen to be whatever, but this is specifically in terms of lifting. I personally get hungrier on rest days. I find that working out for the most part either has a net neutral effect or an appetite suppressant effect. So you have that like 1 hour that you're training and maybe another hour or two of like suppressing appetite a little bit. I can eat after I train for sure. I can always eat, but I'm not more hungry the minute I put my weight down for my last set. I'm probably less hungry, but on a non-training day, what's that meme, that like Narcos meme where he's like standing by the swing? Like that's me, like just like dream thinking about the weights, or I'm like the Kermit meme. He's like by the window and I'm just like, I get a little hungrier and I like don't have that hour that I'm, let's say, focused on something else, which would be that extra, that workout, let's say. Yep. All right. Last one. Hard last one. What keeps you guys motivated after all this time?
You know, I have shifted how I look at motivation. And I don't think I'm that motivated. I am pretty disciplined. But one thing I've really leaned into recently, and I would encourage other people to do the same, is like, you know, this work, that this time is going to pass. This work is worth doing. The training is a challenge, but it's a challenge between you and who you are today and who you want to be in the future. And when the motivation dwindles, which it will after all this time, having a connectedness to the practice that might be a little bit bigger and a little bit grander, and just like, hey, the absence of motivation allows me to cultivate more discipline. It allows me to cultivate more responsibility. Me sticking with working out despite not being motivated to do it has made me better at other shit as an adult that I don't fucking want to do. And I'm just leaning into that heavily as I transition into a more mature phase of life. And even though I'm not as excited as I used to be, it turns out weightlifting has, again, proven itself a fabulous avenue for developing character that I need to develop. So I keep it going because it makes me a better person.
Cool. I love that, man. We'll let you get out of here. Drop a line. Do the thing. People should follow you. Go listen to your podcast. Catch you on Instagram. All that.
Yeah. Just catch me on social media, on YouTube. I'm making some long form videos, podcast for sure. Don't be a stranger, but definitely I'm around. Jordan and I are cut from the same cloth, and that I think both of us do this because it's our passion, and helping people is a gift, and I'm happy to help anybody who wants to hop on and follow or chat. If I can get to your question, I always will.
All right.
Thanks for having me on, bro.
Thanks, bro. We'll talk soon.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Where Optimal Meets Practical. If you liked the episode, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media or left a 5-star review on iTunes. That stuff really helps. If you ever want to get in touch with me, just shoot me a DM on Instagram @JordanLipsFitness. I'm always around to chat. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.